Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back or welcome to the Building Efficiency Podcast presented by Nenni & Associates. I'm your host, Jim Schaefer. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, Nenni & Associates is an executive search firm focused on the building efficiency industry. That's why we named the podcast the way that we did. And simply put, we help our clients find the right talent. Each week, we sit down with leaders from the industry to discuss their backgrounds, how they got started, and where they see the industry heading. We also get to know our guests and find out what drives them to be successful. And on today's episode, episode 108, we sit down with Mark Tor from Blackstone Energy Services. Now, I've known Mark for a few years now, so this was a great opportunity for us to reconnect and learn about how he's been able to progress in his career, utilizing his root cause analysis thinking and entrepreneurial mindset to solve big problems, challenges, or better put, reframing those challenges and problems into opportunities that could shape future generations. Mark and I discussed the massive decarbonization project that he was part of implementing at University of Toronto, and of course, now what he's up to at Blackstone Energy Services and how they're going to market today. Mark has some great answers to our questions at the end as he highlights his daily non-negotiables and what he wants his lasting legacy to be. Now, if you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our channel and consider downloading this episode and future episodes. This is really the only way that we can track how many people are listening. So if you're one of the folks out there still streaming the episodes, I urge you to consider hitting that download button instead. And if you enjoy this episode, please share it with your network and recommend to a friend or a colleague in the industry. Now, we think you're going to enjoy this conversation with Mark and me. So let's drop in. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Building Efficiency Podcast. Today we're sitting down with Mark Tor, who is the Vice President of Clean Infrastructure Solutions with Blackstone Energy Services. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Jim. Great to be here.
Yeah. Well, I know you and I have been in touch for the last couple of years or so and have followed your career a little bit. And I'm sure there's a lot of our audience members or listeners that are going to recognize your name. But maybe for our less Canadian audience that's out there that may not know you as well, tell us a little bit about your background, you know, kind of where you grew up and how you got started in your career.
Would love to. So I'm a prairie boy at heart. I grew up in Winnipeg, Manitoba. And studied mechanical engineering. That's kind of how I got my start, I guess. I was always really curious about what makes things tick. My parents would tell you I was a pain in the butt because as soon as I learned how to use a screwdriver, I was taking the knobs off the doors and tearing apart all my toys. But I think that naturally led into mechanical engineering, where I studied at University of Manitoba, studied business there as well. And then really got into energy management and sustainability as a student in 1998 in healthcare, and was really tasked and provided the opportunity to develop some, at the time, what I thought were pretty big projects, looking at wastewater recovery and reuse and that kind of thing. During my degree, I also sort of had a couple really unique internships. So I did went to the engineering consulting kind of sector. And I also kind of landed in Winnipeg in the industrial sector at Motor Coach Industries and Monarch Industries, where it was really manufacturing industrial. And I got put in roles which were really focused on troubleshooting. So really learning how to approach and tackle problems. Really sort of being introduced to the concept of root cause analysis and some really analytical thinking, which I think has served me really well. So yeah, prairie boy at heart and sort of curious by nature, if you will.
Yeah, it seems like every mechanical engineer always has a similar story about, growing up and trying to understand how things work and operate. And that kind of carries you into your degree and starting off in your career. So, well, I think the last time that we were in touch, you were at University of Toronto. So maybe pick us up there, tell us a little bit more about that role, some of the things you were able to get accomplished, and then maybe bring us up to speed here with Blackstone.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to have that opportunity at University of Toronto. I moved from Montreal, where I was living. I'd been in Montreal for about 9 years and saw this opportunity in Toronto. Very unique in the space in that University of Toronto is probably one of the largest higher education institutes in North America. And they had a unique role there where it was a director of energy management and sustainability combined. And I also knew the chief operating officer there, And I knew that he was a very ambitious gentleman and looking to affect change in a big way. So we talked about the role there, and he really wanted someone who was going to come in and be an agent for change and to enable that person to go and, you know, dream big and implement big projects. And that's exactly what I did there with his collaboration and support. And we were able to launch a $193 million decarbonization project, which just got launched in 2023. So for those that sort of understand the space, you know, I arrived there in August of 2020 in the middle of a pandemic, and very trying times to try and get projects, procurement, inflation. But despite that, the team and I were able to launch this massive decarbonization project, which is going to reduce U of T's scope one and scope two emissions by a minimum of 55% in the next coming years. So that was a really big launching pad for them and really put them on the map. You know, that really led to me making the switch over to Blackstone. So after the success at U of T, Blackstone, I guess I caught their attention. And, you know, they've been good guys and people I've been talking with for a number of years, but they had a very unique opportunity for me to move over here. They recently have formed a partnership with the Canadian Infrastructure Bank, which is sort of an arm of the government, the federal government, that is tasked with being an impact investor. And their focuses are on, you know, accelerating infrastructure development in Canada, but also focusing on decarbonization. So they've formed a deal with Blackstone, as well as with Enbridge Sustain, which is a new branch of Enbridge Gas that is really focusing exclusively on investing in and developing low carbon solutions and infrastructure. So we sort of have this three-way deal where Blackstone is the exclusive implementer for Enbridge Sustain and the Canadian Infrastructure Bank. So it really positions us as a super ESCO, which is maybe not a term that you hear too often, but a super ESCO is one that not only does the design and implementation of energy savings projects or decarbonization projects with performance guarantees, but also offers in that next level of ability to finance projects. And in our case, you know, we can leverage the ultra low interest rates from the Canadian Infrastructure Bank, which is very, very appealing. So I'm extremely excited to be part of the leadership team here at Blackstone Energy Services and looking to offer our super ESCO services to the market.
Oh, that's excellent. So let's just take a step back for a second. When I heard $193 million decarbonization project, I mean, like, I'm just trying to wrap my head around that. So like, where do you start with something like that? You know, what's like the longest lever that's pulled? Like, hey, this is going to have the largest immediate impact on this effort. I guess what's kind of like step one look like?
Oh, geez. So step one, I think when you're approaching any problem, and this sort of takes me back to my root cause analysis days when I was, you know, an engineering student, but it's to just understand the flow of energy. So when I got to U of T, you know, there was a lot of competing priorities and some ongoing projects and some development work that was happening. And I think I just had to step back and look at the big picture, look macro a little bit. And I was like, geez, you know, we have a central heating system and, you know, 75% of our carbon footprint is coming from this one building. So it led me to really just try and find a solution that focused on decarbonization of our central plant. And that's what we ended up doing. We ended up investigating as a team, you know, opportunities and solutions there. And that was the first step, is, you know, finding all the key stakeholders internally, engaging them, getting feedback and sort of co-creating a project scope. And then from there, once we sort of had something we thought made sense, we started to work on sort of a more detailed project scope or a concept report. And in parallel to all of that, I was working on sort of revamping our procurement process to enable sort of an ESCO style project at the University of Toronto. They hadn't done that style of project for many decades. I don't even know if they actually ever did. So this was something that was very new to them, you know, trying to go to market for a project that was going to have guaranteed decarbonization results and outcomes. So at the end of the day, we're able to put something together that went through our board approval last May, and it was approved at $193 million. you know, with the CIB financing as well, and guaranteed outcomes of, you know, about 55,000 tons of Scope 1 and 2 annual reduction. So this really brought U of T, you know, we refer to it as Project Leap because it really was going from, you know, zero to a huge leap forward in their decarbonization strategy and outcomes. They were looking to basically get to net negative emissions by 2050 in reference to a 1990 baseline. And this got them, you know, about close to 60% of the way there with one project. So affectionately known as Project Leap.
Mm. And I'm not as locked into the Canadian market as obviously here in the United States, but I know that historically Canada has been ahead of the U.S. as it relates to P3 projects or public-private partnerships. So this project here, does that fall under that umbrella, the P3 type model, or is this something a little bit different on the asset ownership side?
Yeah, good question, Jim. It's a little bit different than a P3. It's it was more like a traditional ESCO project, but where the owner, in this case U of T, when it got its own third-party financing. So we were able to get financing directly from the Canadian Infrastructure Bank. And, you know, maybe I use the word directly kind of loose, just meaning that it didn't come from the ESCO partner, but we actually did have to create a special purpose vehicle to sort of accept that that financing from the CIB. But it was very advantageous for us. And, you know, the federal government is definitely a very good partner to have in, you know, decarbonization projects. So that really played out well in our favor.
Yeah. I guess you could do a whole nother episode on just the SPV and the financing and everything that goes into a project of this size and scope. So very cool. All right. So let's jump back here to Blackstone Energy. You'd give us a little bit of an overview, and I think just the backing and the partnership there with the government. So I guess, where does that expand you into the types of markets or the types of projects that you guys are going after? I guess, what's kind of on the horizon for you and your team right now?
Right now, I'd say that we're really been very focused on the institutional sector. So looking at healthcare, looking at colleges, looking at universities, but, you know, I'd say equally, you know, interested and active in the commercial space. So commercial real estate, the MERBs kind of sector. I think, you know, there's been a great equalizer in the market over the last maybe 5 to 7 years. And that's really been this pressing need to decarbonize. And I think that that's hit all sectors equally. Whereas, you know, previously we'd seen different waves in the market where, you know, it would be, there would be a greater impetus on, say, healthcare or on institutional, like higher education, or maybe in private sort of commercial real estate, you know, and different incentives that spurred activity. But right now I think that decarbonization is affecting all sectors equally and with a great sense of urgency.
Yeah. And as it relates to, I guess I'm just thinking about, I'm trying to compare again, I hate to keep doing the Canadian to US comparison here, but that's just kind of the lens that I'm looking at it through. But, you know, as far as like the competitive landscape that's out there, you know, here in the United States, there's a lot of competing ESCOs that are out there. And it, although it's a very similar model at the end of the day, each ESCO kind of has their own way of approaching projects from an engineering standpoint, relationship standpoint, et cetera. So I guess for Blackstone, you know, and I assume this was part of the process and you coming over here and going through the interview process and all that, but what have you uncovered so far about, you know, what's really separating Blackstone from maybe some of your competitors out there?
Yeah, it's also a great question. So I think that the number one thing separating us is the fact that we have this strategic partnership with the Canadian Infrastructure Bank and Enbridge Sustain. You know, there's ESCOs in the past have sometimes come in with third-party financing for projects or perhaps even self-financing projects. But I think having the federal government again and a huge player that's been in the utility sector for many, many, many decades, like Enbridge, having their arm, Enbridge Sustain, come in as strategic partners, they're not just bringing money, they're bringing a lot of value add. And I think that that's a key differentiator for us. We're offering sort of an energy as a service model. So it's kind of like a utility model. And Enbridge is going to have an equity stake in the project solution and the infrastructure. And they're going to own and operate that energy system for, you know, a long term. And so they become very long-term strategic partners. you know, over the course of 20 plus years, along with the financial strength of the federal government and the Canadian Infrastructure Bank, really looking to put money towards decarbonization. So for an owner, you know, we're not coming in just with a strong technical, you know, heat pump or decarbonization solution that is, you know, boilers and chillers and heat pumps, but it's also coming in with someone who has a long-term excellent track record in the utility space as a strategic sort of owner operator, performing the maintenance, but also with the federal government coming in with the cash. So this is really, I think, a difference maker for Blackstone to be involved in this strategic partnership. And it's something that also in the Canadian market is unprecedented. Nothing's ever happened like this. So it's something that's really going to have a big impact, I think, in the Canadian sort of retrofit space.
Oh, I could see why you made the move. So let's hover out. Let's look into the future. I know that's always a difficult thing to do, but just for a fun thought exercise here, Mark, where do you see the industry heading the next, you know, 5, 10, 15 years?
That's a good question. I keep looking for my crystal ball. I seem to have misplaced it. But, you know, based on what I'm seeing and what I've been seeing over the last number of years, I think that at a macro level, I really see energy systems as a whole going from being very highly centralized systems to being more decentralized. And I think, you know, a good example of this is our electric grid. So I see our electric grids going from being, you know, big sort of centralized power plants, whether that's nuclear or it's hydro or gas plants or coal plants. I see these going from being very centralized, where it's, you know, a central plant pushing out the energy, to being much more decentralized and enabling smaller players or, you know, end use production. Like a good example of this, a very simple one, is just, you know, putting solar panels on a home and having the homes produce their own energy, and the grids or the networks becoming more of a balancing agent to enable sort of smart flows of energy. So I think in the next, it's already happening, but I think that in the next 5, 10, 15 years, we're going to see a lot of growth in this space. And I think we're going to continue to see this trend in terms of the projects and where the money and the investments are being put. You know, I read yesterday, I think it was yesterday, that even this upcoming solar eclipse that's going to be happening, I think at the early April, I believe, but they're saying how just the thing, something simple like a solar eclipse is going to put some critical strain on the electric grid in the Northeast. And I think that should be a really big eye opener to all of us in the space to go, you know, holy cow, like if a solar eclipse, you know, puts our grid resiliency at risk or in jeopardy, then, you know, there's something that's really urgently needs to happen here to correct this. You know, it's already been over 20 years since we had that huge blackout in the Northeast. You know, that put, you know, my hometown right now of Toronto, you know, there was blackouts here, there was blackouts throughout New York and Massachusetts and sort of the whole Northeast, right? So I think our grid is fragile, and a lot of these legacy district energy systems are at the end of their useful life, and we need to reinvent them moving forward.
Hmm. Sounds like a big challenge.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is this something that you wake up every day, roll up your sleeves, like, all right, I'm going to help solve this problem?
100%. You know, this challenge is also, I think, the great opportunity of our generation.
Hmm.
You know, going back to when I was a student, my first job in energy and sustainability in 98, I had a wonderful mentor in the hospital I was working in. And I remember being, you know, 19 years old, and he was tasking me with finding energy and sustainability solutions in that hospital. And I would come into his office every day and I go, oh my God, I found a problem. And he'd sit back and he goes, are you sure it's a problem or is it maybe an opportunity? So even at an early age there, I was lucky and very fortunate to have a mentor that reframed the way I viewed things and to view challenges and problems really as opportunities. And I think that, you know, the energy transition we're going through right now with decarbonization is really a tremendous opportunity. And that's how I see it. I think it's also the challenge of our generation.
All right. Well, I think that's a perfect way for us to transition to the last part of the show. I wanted to ask you the same four questions I ask every guest who comes on, and I wanted to lead off with, Mark, what are your daily non-negotiables?
Daily non-negotiables, family first. I have two wonderful young kids at home and a wonderful wife, and I need to make sure that they're my rock and that I make time for them every single day. You know, in this line of work, sometimes there's travel involved and, you know, things get busy and, you know, we're here at Blackstone trying to boil the ocean here and affect change in a very massive way, but I can't let that lose sight of, you know, what's number one. And that's my wife, Carolyn, my daughter, Victoria, my son, Zach.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. What advice would you give to your 22-year-old self?
22. I was already running around like a chicken with my head cut off. I was trying to boil the ocean. So I would tell my 22-year-old self to, you know, stay focused, you know, focus on what's in front of you. Don't get distracted by thinking too big and, you know, maintain that really good work-life balance, you know, keep going with your sports and your activities and, you know, dedicate yourself to work and to your mission, but don't let it create an imbalance.
All right. And along those lines, what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
That's an easy one. I've got, we've definitely got our work cut out for us, you know, with this sort of challenge of our generation. Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely more of an inventor and an entrepreneur at heart. And I really get excited about innovation and, you know, finding the best solution for any kind of challenges or problems out there. I really love to think big. I like to understand the big picture, the interactions, the macro piece. And then once I have a really firm and a good grasp of the big picture, it really helps me dive in and develop sort of the best solution. And this sort of takes me back to my early days and my training in root cause analysis and sort of being able to, you know, step back, see the big picture, understand what's happening, and then really dive in with a laser focus, right? So every day, that's what gets me out of bed is that new challenge of the day and how I'm going to apply that thinking and that problem solving to the whatever challenges are in front of me.
All right, last question here. What do you want your lasting legacy to be?
So again, you know, maybe even touching a little bit on the last question you had, Jim, or the last few questions. I want to be able to look my kids in the eye in 20 years from now and say, and let them tell them that, you know, we did the best we could and that we made an impact so that we didn't ignore climate change and that we didn't ignore the urgency of these situations. So I want them to be able to look at me and say, you know, Dad, you did a good job. So my legacy is with my family, with my kids. I think anything aside from that is secondary. But I really want them to be proud of the work that that my wife and I have done towards ESG and decarbonization and really, you know, leading the way in this sector. So that would definitely be make me the most proud, and that would be my legacy.
Well, I think that's a perfect way to wrap up the show. So, Mark, thanks for being a guest on the Building Efficiency Podcast.
Thanks so much, Jim. Appreciate it.
All right. All right, there you have it, episode 108 with Mark Couture. I hope everyone enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And if you did enjoy it, please be sure to subscribe to our channel wherever you enjoy listening to your favorite podcasts. We hope you're sharing this with your friends and colleagues as well. And one last thing, if you have any future guests in mind from the industry, please reach out to me. We'd love to hear from you loyal listeners. So until next time, I'm Jim Schaefer, and we'll catch you on the next episode.